Welcome back to the Overthink Podcast Network. I promise I won't keep doing these intros. My name is Ben, but I just wanted to make sure that you know what you're in for. So we have a lot of content in the works. It's going to be appearing here on a weekly basis, possibly even more than that pretty soon because we have a lot to get out there. But yeah, we're talking all about art, media, and culture and just trying to make deeper connections to things that we often miss upon first viewing. So that's kind of the overall theme for all these podcasts right now. It might feel like each show is a totally different thing and just kind of disconnected, but each of these shows will start reappearing pretty soon with second and third and fourth episodes. So yeah, stay tuned and subscribe to this podcast so you'll get them all. In today's episode, we're going back a few years to 2002 and talking about a movie that seems more relevant than ever. So yeah, here's Chad Franks with The Resistance Rewind.
Hey guys, this podcast can get really political, so we just want to say up front that the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the host and other contributors. So if you have any issues with those opinions, deal directly with them. We'll be providing their information in the post notes. Thanks again. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Hello, welcome to the Resistance Rewind, a podcast that rewinds and reviews films from the past but keeps its feet firmly planted in the current events of today. I am your host, Chad Franks, and with me today is Ben Helms. Ben is a film lover, songwriter, and podcast producer extraordinaire, and I'm really happy to have you on here and talk about this this great film here with you today. How you doing, Ben?
Dude, yeah, I'm excited to be on the podcast, the pilot episode.
That's right.
Of Resistance Rewind. Definitely excited to be here, man. Thanks again for having me on.
Excellent. Yeah, no problem. So today we're going to unwind and rewind and review Gangs in New York. But before we do that, this is, like you said, Ben, our pilot podcast of the Resistance Rewind. So I think it would be appropriate to give some background on both myself and maybe the basis of the podcast, if you don't mind. So
yeah, please.
Yeah, so I know there's a lot of great movie review podcasts out there that I love myself, but obviously they're generally doing newly released films that just came out in theaters. But I think it'd be there's a lot of value to maybe revisiting older films, especially ones that still are very aptly relevant to today's events. You know, events that we're seeing in the news, on our social media feeds. You know, things that we have to deal with in our culture at large. So that's kind of what I'm hoping to do here in this podcast is engage what's going on now with movies from the past. So every episode I'll bring on a guest host to go back in a cinema time machine with me to rewatch an older film and discuss how the themes of that movie are still pertinent today and possibly talk about lessons that we can learn from those movies. So a little bit about myself. I'm a big movie buff and a political junkie, and those things usually, I guess, they collide oftentimes, and that's kind of what I wanted to bring out here in this podcast. But when it comes to movies, I'm just a fan. Like, I'm not a practitioner in any way, but on the political side, I've worked for the federal government in a couple capacities. I have a military background. I've worked on political campaigns. So for me, like, whenever I'm watching movies, my favorite movies are the ones that hold a lot of weight to them, that really either inform me or get me excited to help inform other people. And I think that really frames the way I watch every movie. So I know I go to a movie with one of my friends who's a cop. So every time we see a cop movie, he's constantly like, that's not real, or they got that right. And I feel like I do the same thing with politics. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, that's unrealistic. But for me, it's also more like, oh man, this gets me excited to go talk to people about this subject. Or like, man, I really think that people maybe don't know anything about this. Like, instead of having them read a long essay, which is what I'd rather do, but maybe they wouldn't, say, hey, maybe go watch Gangs in New York and maybe we can discuss later. So that's kind of my idea behind this podcast. But really where this all came from is back last December. It was about a month after the 2016 election. And me, along with I think a lot of people in this country, were really reeling. Even if the election maybe went your way, I think a lot of people just felt very, you know, maybe upset by the process. And I was talking to a lot of
friends.
There's
a lot of tension.
So much tension. You're right. It's like so much tension. And I think that people were like, yeah, it was just kind of, it just wasn't, I felt like in a bad mood. And it really made me want to get away from politics altogether. And for somebody like me, that's really hard to do. And so I just didn't watch the news, stopped doing everything. And then I went to go see Rogue One, actually. I went and saw Rogue One. And it really got me excited again. You know, and this is a movie that had like nothing to do with real life. You know, it's a sci-fi movie, but you know, it's like, it's a movie about
Obama was like a really small part of that movie.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, and I think even Trump possibly too. And so,
but like minor characters.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you look in the background, you'll see him, but yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
but right next to Jar Jar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so, but I was just like, it really got me inspired again to go like, you know what though? Like, I mean, they literally say in the movie, like, you know, rebellions are are built on hope. But it got me excited to re-engage again. And I was like, man, I really want to like tell somebody about that. Like, hey, man, like, you know, go see this movie. It really got me excited to go back out there and just kind of make a difference again, you know, and then get me amped. I'm like, oh, just, but it's weird how a movie can do that. So again, the best movies are movies that really, you know, just get, you know, kind of inspire people. And even though they may not be related, this weird offside, you know, Star Wars movie. However, today, we're going to be discussing a movie that's maybe not so inspiring, but it is very relevant. And I think it's something that maybe we, is worth discussing. So, this edition, our first episode, we'll be talking about Martin Scorsese's Gangs in New York. And this was Ben, this was your first time, watching Gangs in New York. Is that correct?
It was, I think I'd seen, or I know I'd seen many parts of it. I think just randomly on TV, HBO, TNT, whatever, growing up. And just, so I was 16, I believe, when it came out.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe 17. And so didn't see it in theaters at the time. I think it was a little above my head as far as just kind of a bunch of fight scenes and a bunch of political talking that I wouldn't have understood at the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. For me, I saw the movie when it first came out. So yeah, it came out in 2002. Stars Daniel Day-Lewis, Leonardo DiCaprio, Cameron Diaz, and of course John C. Reilly. I mean, I don't know why that guy wasn't put at the top.
I love. Yeah. As soon as I saw him, he's in the like one of the first shots and I was just oh my gosh, just smiled so big. Any film he is in is instantly better because he's there.
Yeah, but it was funny because I'm like, there's other big names in this movie, you know, like Jim Broadbent, Liam Neeson. I love Brendan Gleeson, but I'm like, but John C. Reilly, under the radar MVP in this movie. So
Brendan Gleeson, as soon as I saw him too, I was like, oh, dude, this isn't just going to be funny. This is actually going to be a good movie.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, wait a minute, are these guys going to, but this was this movie when it came out. I saw it when it came out, kind of different than you, but it was way above my head. In 2002, I was in middle school. I should not have seen this movie. My parents were so my parents were actually kind of strict, but except when it came to movies, for some reason, like, oh, if it's an Oscar nominated film, like, you know, you should see it. Like, it's going to teach you something. And for
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Man. So, so I saw it. I remember, and my parents and I have watched the Oscars like every year since I was little. Like, the Oscars are kind of a big deal. And this one was nominated for 10 Oscars, actually. Best Picture, Director, Daniel Day-Lewis got nominated. It didn't win any of its 10, but I mean, I remember it just being a big...
It didn't win any?
No, it didn't win any. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It was just a 2002 great year. Angels won the World Series that year, by the way. But I won't talk to you, Ben, about that.
Let's move on.
A Beautiful Mind won Best Picture in 2002.
And
I remember Russell Crowe won Actor that year and everything. And so I think that's maybe why... it was a good year for movies that year, so I think that's maybe why it didn't end up winning. But it definitely was in the zeitgeist, though. It's not one of these movies that just kind of like got swept under the rug.
No, yeah, I think it's still definitely. It's something that I heard about for years and years after. Yeah. Definitely held up as far as fame and prestige.
Yeah, and before we get into like really how relevant this film is and how like, I mean, this is probably the 10th or 15th time somewhere in between that I've seen this movie. I rewatch it a lot, even though it's not really one of my favorite movies, but I love Daniel Day-Lewis, and we can talk more about that later. But we really talk about like even now, every time I watch it, it just seems like it's almost more and more relevant, which is scary. I just want to get your like initial impressions. Like, what are your thoughts on the film? Do you like it? Are you a Scorsese guy? Like, what do you think, Ben?
I end up really liking Scorsese films, but I don't enjoy watching them, which sounds weird, but like, you know, Taxi Driver, Goodfellas, Departed is one of my top 10. I love Departed.
Oh, you and I are the same.
Wolf of Wall Street. Mm-hmm. I agree is amazing, but while I'm watching them, they're such tough watches, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
From the characters just being incredibly flawed to sex, drugs, and violence and almost probably all of them. Actually.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's also just technical things from that first fight scene in Gangs of New York that's just super brutal. Mm-hmm. It also has these weird editing choices that I was trying to figure out if it was very 2002 or just very Scorsese, with like these like half-timed, like I don't even know what that, like slow motion but not slow motion, like sped up really awkwardly, like wide angle lenses, and just these things that they seemed very unrealistic, kind of like the opposite of Saving Private Ryan.
Yes.
Where it's just like that brutal, realistic storming, you know, the beaches of Normandy. This seemed almost like superhero-y in the like, not quite goofy because it was real. Yeah. You know, they were trying to be real characters and realistic in that sense. Mm. But it seemed to be purposefully over the top violence.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what Scorsese does really well in, again, I think all of his movies are really violent. I'm trying to think of one that's not. Maybe like The Aviator.
The Aviator, dude.
It's pretty brutal.
It's so brutal. Like, he can't.
Hugo.
There you go. Hugo. exactly. Yeah. But you should see the director's cut, man. It was.
Bloody, guts everywhere.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that, though, because I think it's an edit. I think it's the way he edits film. So I just saw Silence, which was his movie that just came out last year.
Yeah, it just came out. Yeah,
and it was I really, really liked it. I thought it was a great movie. But again, I never want to see it again. I thought it was great.
Right.
I never want to see it again. But the editing was, I thought, was very strange. And I saw it, because I was really paying close attention to that movie, and then I've rewatched the other Scorsese movies since. His editing's just different. I think it's, I don't know if it's, I don't know what it is, but I think it's the way he does things. And it's funny. He either makes movies that I never want to see again or I watch over and over again. So I watch, I'm with you. The Departed is probably one of my favorite movies of all time, hands down. So I'll rewatch that one all the time. I'll rewatch Gangs of New York all the time. And then I like The Aviator a lot and Goodfellas. But like, other than that though, I love Casino, but I can't watch that over and over again. I can't watch them get beat the way they get beat. And even like, I have to be in the right mood for Goodfellas too.
So the point that I'm trying to think of in my head is there are movies that are more brutal and more graphic and bloody, like Gladiator, right? Yes. It came out around the same, I think it was 99.
Yeah.
And that's a movie that I've watched dozens of times. Mm-hmm. I love that movie. Yeah. But it doesn't hold up. There's not like any social relevance to Gladiator.
Absolutely.
Like what the takeaway is, shadows and dust. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what the takeaway
is. Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah. No, it's so,
our lives are meaningless. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. it means nothing.
Right. So I think that there's more than just, this was too gory, I don't want to watch it again, mm-hmm. but it has to be the realness of, or I guess the reality is also another way of saying that. the reality of what it's saying about us and the reality, the realness of those characters, the depth between them, the aggravation between all of them. Mm-hmm. So it's more than just like kind of that visual, visceral reaction that I have to the visuals that makes me not want to watch it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's funny that you say that because I love Gladiator too, but kind of going back to like the thesis of this podcast is, I want to watch like Gladiator to be entertained or just kind of go back. Like this is going to sound really weird, but as like a warm blanket kind of a thing, you know what I mean?
No, I totally agree.
Yeah. I want to watch that. Yeah. I'm the same with Black Hawk Down. Like I'll watch that over and over again, but like, but a movie like this one, I need to be in the right mood, but I also, again, like there's things like I don't want to turn away from, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be the guy that like looks away when that happens. Cause I think it's really important to talk about these things.
Yes.
And I think that's what was cool about this movie is I don't think he was, and Scorsese, I think he doesn't get credit for this because I think he is just so violent, but I think he is actually trying to make a point, you know what I mean? I think people miss the point, and I really want to talk about later on in the show something I like to call bad fan syndrome, and I think people really suffer from that when it comes to Scorsese. I think it's like what that means kind of, and I'll talk more later, is people really miss the point and they're there to watch the gore and the violence, and that's not what I take out of Gangs of New York. What I take out of Gangs of New York is like, holy crap, this movie came out this movie is based 155 years ago, and like we're still dealing with this stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think
that's the thing with Gladiator, the warm blanket part for me is you can turn your brain off with Gladiator and just enjoy like the pretty acting, the pretty pictures, the cool, the nice, comfortable story that fits in nicely.
Yeah.
I can't, and just like you, I can't turn my brain off and watch Kings of New York.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's too real. And which is weird because it's a, what's it called? It's a period piece. Exactly. Yeah. Same kind of thing. It didn't happen in the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
50 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but that really, I think, brings it into the next thing I want to bring into is like, so, and something I want to ask every guest that comes on this podcast, like, do you still think this movie is relevant, or do you think it's one of those things that we're going to forget about? Like, did you, when you were watching this, were you really feeling like, oh my gosh, like there's things to take away from it? Cause that's what I got, but I want to know if you feel the same.
How could you not? I guarantee you when I'd seen parts of this growing up, there was, I think it was in that, maybe it's the lazy fan or whatever it was that was just like, oh, this is bloody, or like, oh, this is just like Leo going for an Oscar or DDL, you know, doing his method. By the way, Daniel Day-Lewis would have been terrifying on set for this movie.
Some of the research that I did on this one, I heard he was really difficult to work with. I read an interview from Liam Neeson.
Speaking to his method acting, by the way, for those anyone listening that doesn't realize, he tries to stay in character before filming and during the entire filming.
Yes.
To be Bill the Butcher Cutting.
Yeah. So he did a crazy amount of research. So he learned how to become a butcher. So he actually physically like took classes on how to be a butcher, how to butcher meat and stuff like that. So all the scenes where you see him actually dealing with the knives, those are all real knives, and those are all him being, which I guess Leo was very uncomfortable with. So there's scenes where he's, but that's how he does. He doesn't want to have like prop knives. So
the nearest thing in nature to the flesh of a man is the flesh of a pig. This is the liver. The kidneys, the heart. This is a wound. The stomach will bleed and bleed. This is a kill. This is a kill. The main artery, this is a kill. You try.
Anyway, but oh, I heard Liam Neeson was talking about how he was unpleasant on set. Like, he would only call Liam Neeson Priest, which is his character's name. and how he would just look at him with this, like, disdain, you know? And so it was really, really interesting. But yeah, it's what I, and so some actors love that, some don't. So,
yeah, sorry. Back to your question, if you want to.
No, that's great. No, okay, I love this stuff. Yeah, but did you find it relevant when you were watching it?
Yeah, I think the visuals from the first scene, which I was like, wow, sepia tone. Just like turning up the heat on that color tone there. which is, you know, it's yeah, exactly. Trying to get you into the whole period piece, 1860s sure. thing, I get, or 1840s mm-hmm. from the first scene. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you have the two rival gangs, which are the natives, mm-hmm. the people who have lived in New York. They don't really define it, but, you know, a couple generations, more than one, I guess, is the definition of native.
Sure.
People that were born in New York, and then the Irish, the people who were born in Ireland and are new to New York City. Mm-hmm. And seeing that cast in the light with what we're 2 weeks out after Charlottesville.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I know it's still a city, but the incident at Charlottesville just the mm-hmm. horror that happened there and all of this, nationalism, it probably isn't strong enough because that almost lets people off the hook, but xenophobia, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you see Antifa everywhere, and there's a big, you know, the riots in Berkeley a few days ago, where Antifa just kind of took back a park from marchers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that the visuals of the first scene where you have the two huge groups walking mm-hmm. through a park at each other.
Yeah.
Was basically like looking at CNN 2 weeks ago, at Charlottesville.
No. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what really like this, especially watching it this time for me. The last time I might have watched it might have been like a couple years ago.
Yeah. But
watching it this time, really with framing it in what we're experiencing right now as a country, because I don't care how you spin it, I don't care where you fall on the ideological like spectrum. Like, things aren't great right now. Like, people are not feeling. Right. You know, people aren't feeling good. I don't care if you support the president or don't support the president. I think we can all agree things. There's a lot of tension, like you were saying earlier.
I think whether he agrees that America is not great right now.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, you're right. Actually, you're so right. Like, he wanted to make America great again, right?
Yes,
so he's saying that right now it's not. So I think you're right.
The again part is the thing I have issue with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Was it 1862? Was that when America was great?
Yeah, I think so. That's why we should show him this movie. We'll talk about that later,
too. Okay,
yeah, right, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice tease.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But so for me, yeah, it was really hard for me to watch. But there's two things that really got me. So I'm with you 100% on, you know, what happened in Charlottesville, all these movements going on, and how, like, you know, I feel like maybe there's been times in this country where like discord has been civil. And then in this movie, it's not. And I think in right now, our 2017, it's not, you know what I mean? Like, we saw a terrorist kill a protester and murder other ones. And, I'm not mincing words. He was a terrorist.
Yes.
Kill people. And like, that's crazy. I'm watching this thinking, I know I saw pictures from that event and I immediately thought, oh, this is like a movie. But it's not, you know, like, I saw the pictures of the people, you know, being injured and literally flying in the air.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've only seen that on a movie set. And it was just upsetting that I'm seeing it. You know, it's not a movie set. This is real life. But on the other level, something I really want to talk about, too, is that it has to do with the Civil War, which is really what started on Charlottesville, was the removal of Civil War.
Oh, good call. Yeah.
Monuments, you know. And so this is why I think this movie is really important. People should watch this, because this movie is freaking brutal, man. It really is. And I'm guilty of this more than anyone else. I worship the Civil War era in the sense of, like, I'm a huge history buff as well. I've gone to so many battlefields. I've been to Gettysburg twice. I make an effort to, like, always. I watch Ken Burns' documentary on the Civil War every July.
Wow.
I'm just a big Civil War buff. Like, I can't get enough of it. And like I said, every time I'm ever in the South, I don't care if it's this, like, a small battlefield, I need to go. So I'm guilty of idolizing the Civil War as well. But that's why it's important to watch a movie like this, because it's not all, like, if you watch Gods and Generals, for example, like, Gods and Generals is another movie that just glorifies the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And this isn't, like, even though this wasn't a Civil War battle going on, like, it happened in New York City when all the fighting was going on in the South.
Yeah.
But, like, it was gross and disgusting, man. Like, what people were doing, what brothers, American brothers and sisters were doing to each other.
Yep.
And, like, I think that people need to see that. So when they're out there, like, I don't care if you want to keep the statues up or tear them down, whatever it is, like, you need to know when you're seeing that, like, what was going on when those people were real people, when they weren't just a statue.
Yeah.
And so that's why watching this movie, I think, is important, or movies like this is important, is to say, no, these things are brutal, man. These things aren't great. Like, you brought up Saving Private Ryan, and that was a real turning point in war movies, you know, and which is crazy to think, because that movie came out, like, in the late 90s.
Yeah.
But, like, I think it was like, no, guys, like, war is awful, okay? Like, right. War is not great. Like, war is not John Wayne style. Like, it's, like, if you're, you know, like, it's brutal. Like, there's someone screaming for his mom, you know, on the beaches of Normandy, yeah. You know? And so, but, like, watch that, you know? Like, watch that when you're thinking about war, when you're thinking about idolizing these people. It doesn't mean that you can't. It doesn't mean you can't put a statue of Patton up somewhere or a statue of Eisenhower or whatever we're talking about World War II. But, like, but know what you're saying when you're supporting it. You know what I mean? Know what you're saying, what these people advocated for.
That's the thing that I've heard argued is that, why are we getting rid of these monuments to these men that are, you know, why are we erasing history is the argument against getting rid of them, I guess.
Sure.
One of the arguments I've heard. When you have people that aren't, like, pro-rebellion, pro-slavery, or whatever it is, or you know, neo-Nazis, basically. Non-neo-Nazis who are still supporting these statues say that.
Sure.
And the argument that I have is, look at what the statues say on them.
Yeah.
They say things like, for our brothers wearing gray, or for our for the South, or for
stars
the stars and bars, whatever it is. I mean, it's not saying, have these statues lest we make these mistakes again. It's not something like that, where it's like, keep history alive. And so, you know, it's not the same reason that we have Holocaust memorials.
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly.
We don't have statues of Hitler to remember the Holocaust.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's why watching this movie, it was so, I'm thinking about that in my mind. It's like, wow, I wonder how many people that are agitated or upset about, like, the removal, like, if they really know the history of it, especially, like, this one was around a statue of Robert E. Lee. And I've heard really good arguments on both sides about, like, Robert E. Lee, like, hated monuments to soldiers, you know what I mean? Like he absolutely hated it. Like, he would be the last person that would want a statue of himself. But I wonder how many of these people there know that. But let's not kid ourselves too. Those people weren't there. These people don't know anything about these.
We're giving them too much credit.
People. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's more, what I'm thinking more too is that the culture around it, like people like us talking about it, people that weren't there.
Yeah.
But it's just crazy to think that these events were depicted, you know, the New York draft riots really happened. You know, they really happened. I think that's actually the most accurate part of the movie. A lot of these other people weren't real. Bill Cutting is based off a real person, and Boss Tweed is a real person.
Oh, wow.
So Boss Tweed is a real person. One of the most corrupt people in all of all of American history.
Jeez.
He ended up building the New York City courthouse. But it, like, should have only cost, like, whatever would be, like, the equivalent of $1 million, like, in today's money. And he ended up charging the city, like, $18 million. Like, it's just crazy. Wow. So he's based on a real person. And so is Bill Cutting. His name is Bill Poole, is a real person. So these people are real. But those were just more kind of, like, just, like, you know, that's not what really – those things, like, generally happen. They're not specific things. But the New York draft riots were real. So when you're watching that scene – and you're seeing, like, these black people being targeted, like, that really happened.
Gosh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it happened in the North. It happened in the heart of the Union. You know what I mean?
Like, which I didn't get. So. Yeah. That was mind blowing to me is seeing all of the thing that made me first research it was during the movie, seeing all of the anti-abolitionists in the North. Cause in my history, in my brain, the history I learned was, like, everything South of Virginia or what, like, Virginia and South, right? The Mason-Dixon line or whatever it was. Everyone in the Union basically supported the Union, and everyone in the South supported the South and supported slavery. And that's kind of what history of the past 150 years has played out to be, at least pop history, right? That's not the actual history.
Yeah, exactly. But I think we want to caricature these people that, and I'm very guilty of that as somebody that, like, has a hard time relating to people like that. I want to caricature them and make them this kind of evil, stupid person. You know what I mean? And don't get me wrong, the people that were, the people that the white supremacists that were marching in Charlotte, those are stupid people. I have no problem. That's not a hot take. Yeah. I agree with that. But the people on the periphery that I won't say aren't directly related to those people is I have a hard time relating to that. But then when I watch a movie like this, I'm like, no, I get it. Like, that is that's a real struggle. You know what I mean? And I don't mean that does not justify some of the bad behavior that some people end up doing. Especially you seeing this movie, but I think it is something that, oh man, when we watch movies like this, like, maybe it'll help me relate to understanding that. Cause I could see why they were targeting black people, just horrible. And it's one of the worst things, but New York is, it's funny. I think the region of New York is, they really have historical amnesia, and it's very different from the South, which we're talking about. They, you know, you go to battlefields and they've in the South and they're preserved, you know, these are like worship grounds, but like places like New York, that they do not like, they really push away a lot of their history. Yeah. And I mean, it's just, I mean, and that's what's great. That last shot of the movie, I love that last shot of the movie. Hopefully everyone that's seen this movie, or listen to this podcast, has seen this movie, but you know, this came out in 2002, December of 2002, a year after 9/11, but they kept the towers in that last shot. So I thought that was something that was really interesting. So this was December 2002. So almost a year and a month after the towers fell, they decided to keep that in there. And I thought that was really, I don't know, I would love to know the reason why, yeah, and the choice behind that, of why that was there and it went away. I probably just to remind people, I don't know, I think it was probably very deliberate in the sense, yeah, if they weren't there, it might be out of sight, out of mind. But if it's there, being like, look, like, you know, this is, people are still like dying here, right, but for different, because we can't get along, because we can't agree, you know what I mean? Right. And so I thought that was super powerful.
Stupid reasons. I think that, yeah, it's, mm-hmm, it's easy to see neo-Nazis as, I know in it, I've seen them as like, oh, they don't like people that aren't white. Like that to me, yeah, no, it doesn't make sense. That's a horrible thing to, mm-hmm, say, but it's, yeah, it's clear, I guess. They're like, oh, white people, like same with Hitler, like white, you know, blue eyes, blonde hair, whatever it was, like, mm-hmm, they're, these are tangible things, and it's, they're stupid things.
Yeah.
But when it goes back to like, you know, Gangs of New York, and it's white New Yorkers versus white New Yorkers.
Yeah.
That's the main fight. And it, to me, it's like, obviously you see that, like, that's stupid. Like, those people are from Ireland too, but they've been here for longer. So that makes them natives, I guess. And it puts stuff like modern day neo-Nazis in another light. You realize it's not about color of skin. The color of skin doesn't matter. Hate is hate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? It's just a subjective, absolutely, thing. And the scene where, Bill has found, Leo or Amsterdam in bed with Cameron Diaz.
Yeah.
And he wakes him up in the middle of the night. And he's literally draped in an American flag.
Yes, yes.
As he's talking to him, I think one of the last lines he says in that really long scene is, civilization is crumbling.
I killed the last honorable man 15 years ago. Since then, the priest and me, we lived by the same principles. It was only faith divided us. Civilization is crumbling. God bless you.
Oh, man, I have that in my notes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, which is, yeah, just so, like, a scene taken out of, it sounds like a Trump speech. Like,
yeah.
I was going to try to get around it, but it sounds like a Trump speech, right?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, this is why it's in my notes too, and two things I want to say about that. So a question I always want to ask my guests when they come on here is like, is there something that hit too close to home to you? And I'll ask you that after. Yeah,
for sure.
After, yeah, that hit so close to home to me, because, yes, I'm like, this man is like, he's not just like the Joker. He's not evil for evil's sake. Like,
right.
He believes.
It's not just anarchy or just to be, yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd rather have that. I'd rather, yeah, I could take that. I can almost understand. Oh, you're insane. But right. No. He's not insane. He wants to make America great again. He really, yeah, does. I mean, that's what he meant when, yeah, civilization come. That really like was like a gut check for me, man. I was like, holy crap. Like he believes what he's saying. He believes what he is doing. And, that was hard for me to swallow.
In that scene, he's talking, yeah, about, he's like, hey, did you see that picture downstairs? The only other man that I,
oh yeah,
said, was the only great man I've ever known, or the man of honor I've ever known, something
the
like
last
that.
Great man. Yeah. Last
the
great
last
man
great man. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And I think of Liam Neeson's character as being a good guy. And it wasn't until the end that I was like, oh no, he was just maybe not just as bad, but his goal was to win that fight too. Like,
yeah,
he wanted, mm-hmm, the Irish, yeah, to take over New York. And, mm-hmm, right, I don't know if I don't know if it was as black and white as Bill, sure, the Butcher's or whatever, but, sure, you know, it was not like he was a good guy, I guess.
So there's evil on both sides is what you're saying. It's many sides.
Interesting. Wow. Thanks a lot, yeah, yeah, for that.
No, but So what I was going to say on that too is, well, the first thing I want to say, because you brought up Priest Valen and you're talking about the natives. I love in the first scene when he's talking to him, he calls them the so-called natives.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to call these nativists that are there now. Yes. Like you're a so-called native. Like it's ridiculous because Native Americans are the natives.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like we took it from them.
Gosh.
And I would much rather you just accept that than lie to yourself. You know what I mean? Like I'd rather you just like be able to brazenly say, no, we stole this land from them. And that's just, right, the result of it. Now I wouldn't be happy with that either, but at least you're appreciating history, you know?
Right.
And for what it is, and you can call yourself out. But yeah, that's what, but so that's, this really brings up a point that I, yeah, I want to talk about. Because I have seen this picture of Bill the Butcher with draped with an American flag, like,
yeah,
put on t-shirts.
No,
I've seen it. So people were in the marches, they haven't put on t-shirts and like idolizing this man. And this is something I really want to talk about this, cause this informs a lot of my, like how I watch a lot of shows and TV shows, something I call bad fan syndrome. So my wife will hear me say, oh, this guy's got BFS.
Nice.
And what that is when somebody's watching a movie and they're missing the point, and they start to idolize somebody or make this guy cool, and that's not the point. And there's two people I'll bring up in Bill the Butcher's the last one, but okay. The first one is like Scarface. You see Scarface, like people wear Scarface t-shirts, they put Scarface on their wall. That man is a tragic figure. Like, you know, like, you know, Oliver Stone is trying to say, don't make these guys choices. Like, his life is ruined by the choices he makes. Like, he's a tragic figure. Like, he has this drive. He's this amazing immigrant that could have come over and done great things, but he didn't. He chose to, you know, the easy path, the dark side, you know, he chose that. And so that's a cautionary tale. And so don't root for this guy. But if you have bad fans for him, you're going to idolize this guy. And so that's one thing. And the second one is Breaking Bad. Drove me crazy. Like, like Walter White, that's another cautionary tale. Like, this is like this guy, like crappy things happen to him. Like, I'll give you that. But he made the wrong choices to respond to that. But people were like putting Heisenberg like stickers on their car. And this guy is great. I'm like, no, man, like, that's not the point. Like, this is not that what the, I don't think that's what the artist was trying to convey to you.
Yeah.
And so they got BFS real bad. And that's what I've seen around Bill the Butcher. Like, don't get me wrong. Daniel Day-Lewis killed it in this role. It's one of my favorite roles by him, but he is freaking Hannibal Lecter. And I don't want to wear a shirt with Hannibal Lecter on it unless I'm being ironic. So why would you, like, this guy is not, like, he is an absolute villain. And that's why I really would love for more people to talk about this film or to kind of bring it back into the zeitgeist to be like, look, like, if you support this movement, this nativist movement, this is your hero. You know what I mean? And this guy is not a good person. Like, let's just talk about that. And I'm not saying Amsterdam's a good guy either, but, like, this guy is not a guy to idolize. You know what I mean? And, so that's just something that... Yeah, like I said, that comes up a lot when I'm watching movies and everything.
That
is
not
so,
something that crossed my mind when I watched that scene. I was like, wow. To me, it was like the rat in The Departed, in the last shot. Scorsese's a little, getting a little too, you know, it's on the nose a little
bit. It's very on the nose. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
this
guy
is a nationalist, and he thinks anyone who's not from this country is bad. Let's put a flag on him.
Yeah, and another thing he said, too, in the movie that I think goes along with that, like, civilization's crumbling, is like when he dies, like, I die a true American. And that pisses me off because I'm going to call myself a true American. I don't know what that means, but I will say that I don't think that Bill the Butcher is one. You know what I mean? And that made me angry. Like, that made me upset that, like, but again, you're supposed to see it as like, oh, he's not really a true American. He believes in this false myth of what America is. And it's false. It always has been false. We're a nation of immigrants. And so he's a bad guy. You know what I mean? And so that upset me. It's like when freaking Toby Keith made that song that says, like, we're going to put a boot in your ass. That's the American way. I'm no. Don't, like, say that's the American way. You can say that's Toby Keith's way.
Right.
I'm okay with that if that's what you want to do. But don't, like, label us all that. And so that's why when I see Bill the Butcher saying, like, I die a true American, I'm like, okay, like, you think that, but, like, I'm sitting here as somebody who thinks he's a true American, and I don't agree with that. That's not what America means to me. But, hey, you know what? We're a plural society. You know, there's enough room for everyone, I guess. So, anyway. So, another question, a segment I want to talk about, too, is, like, what the thesis of the film is.
Sure.
And so whatever that thesis is, do we want to reject or adopt the thesis? And I always want to ask, once we do that, would you actually show this film to, like, if you could sit down with the president or, like, members of Congress or important people,
the cabinet,
like,
in or something.
Our, the cabinet, like, would you think we should show this to them? Do you think that would be a good idea or not? So, first of all, so with that, Ben, like, do you think, like, there's a thesis that you see that this movie is trying to tell us as an audience?
So the saying that they said at the beginning, and then they said it in the middle, I think they said it again at the end, was the blood stays on the blade.
No, son, never. The blood stays on the blade. One day you'll understand.
Yeah.
Right. That's what the priest says to Leo. Mm-hmm. And that's what Leo says when he gets back the knife at the end or towards the end. And so that, to me, for Scorsese, is saying, hey, these themes from 1863, like, this is still happening.
Yeah.
Like, this is not a period piece.
Yeah.
This is a story about today, which is cool. And I it's hard because with his films to not have bad fan syndrome in the sense they're all upon first viewing or even just like seeing the trailer or whatever, they're glorifying these horrible things. And I hope and trust that good filmmakers know what they're doing when they represent them that way. And that Scorsese does it with enough depth and with enough good writing and imagery and has done it for long enough that he, for the most part, knows what he's doing in that. You know, you can't overanalyze something enough where you're like, oh, he didn't mean to do that. Like, everything is intentional in his movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the blood stays on the blade, to me, it would be one of the major themes of the movie, and just the mm-hmm. idea that these things are eternal in a way, yeah. Or maybe everlasting, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, specifically in our country, because mm-hmm. This is very much the story of America and how it's just yeah. this, to pick from Game of Thrones, it's a wheel, and whoever's on yeah. top is yeah. ruling, and mm-hmm. there is no Daenerys Targaryen. There, you know,
yeah.
no one has broken mm-hmm. the wheel yet.
Love it, yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's a different spoke, and we're just in a different spoke than the gangs mm-hmm. of New York time, the draft riots of 1863, mm-hmm. and the blood is very much still on the blade.
Absolutely. No, I think, I can't agree with that more. I think, yeah, I think the thesis of this film is really trying to get us to pay attention to the fact that, like, not much has changed.
Yeah.
And so in order for this not to happen again, which is yeah. too late, it's already happened again, and it probably yeah. will happen again yeah. As well. Like, we need to change the way we're interacting with each other. You know what I mean? Or the way we're right. discussing things with each other. We should start a podcast talking about these things. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
you know, but like, you know, like, we need to really change it. Otherwise you're not paying attention. So the right. movie, there was an original song U2 wrote that came with this movie called,
I was wondering that when that hit yeah, came yeah. on, I've never heard it before. So I didn't know mm-hmm. what album it was off of or whatever, but yeah.
Yeah. So it's U2. It won the Golden Globe, but nominated for the Oscar, and it's called The Hands That Built America.
Yeah.
And I think that is again, what they're trying to say, like, hey guys, like, we have this historical amnesia. We're trying to pretend that, like, everything's fine, or that, you know, that this is the first time that this has ever happened before, yeah. but it's not. Like, these are the people that, like, literally, like, built this city that we live in, that we think is one of the greatest cities in the world. Don't get me wrong. I like New York a lot, but yeah, it's like, but we can't forget, like, where we yeah. came from. You know, we can't forget, like, that this five, you know, points area in New York, that was real. Like, it was yeah. a real place of squalor, you know, and disease, and like, and, you know, and the, like, and it's true. We can't forget that this is where we came from. Yeah. Go ahead.
That was one of the things I thought of it, in watching it, was when they had like the big fight at the end, mid fight, like before the military started attacking the yeah. civilians or citizens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like right when the riot started, I was just like, is this what people do for sports?
Yeah.
Like, oh, it was yeah. actually, it was before that, when they were in that like city council meeting or whatever, like mm. all the different gangs, and they were like, yeah. all right, Sunday, 10 a.m. or whatever it was, they decided the time and place
yeah.
to meet and to start their fight. I was like, was this what people did before sports? Because it seemed like, you know, that was like, it almost seemed like they were bored at some point. They're like, we guys, yeah. we have to fight with a bunch of knives,
yeah, which seems exactly. yeah.
horrific and terrible. And then I realized that was just my like privilege and living in the middle of nowhere-ness, whatever it is, my blind spot to be like, no, this is happening. I had to like remind myself.
Yeah.
And be like,
yeah.
no, this yeah. this is literally happening in the U.S., like in mm-hmm. multiple states all over.
Yeah.
And not just because Trump won, or, you know, it's not just a recent thing.
Yeah.
But it's coming to light, luckily, I guess, but it's in the sense that we're more aware of it. That's the lucky part. But
well, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's a scene in the movie where they're talking about, like, are we going to bring pistols? And they said, no, okay. But I'm like, you look at, and so they'll use whatever they have around them. But like, there was right. a guy that the person that killed the people in Charlotte, he used a car. You know what I mean? He didn't use a
yeah.
gun.
Yeah.
And like, and so, yeah, again, it's like the modern equivalent of that. It's like whatever, any way we can, you know, get to these people, you know what I mean? And like, yeah. and there's all kinds of people punching each other now. You're seeing it all the time. Like, even like people on the other side, like, go punch a Nazi. And I'm like,
Antifa, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, well, then let's watch Gangs of New York, you know, because like, it's not, that didn't fix the problem 155 years ago. You yeah. know what I mean? It didn't, if it would have worked then let's repeat it. But yeah, so that's what I think the movie is trying to get us to do, is like, hey guys, like, these are the hands that built America, or the blood stays on the knife. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, guys, like, let's change up the narrative here. Otherwise we're just going to do this over and over and over again. So I want to ask you, Ben, like, do you think that this is a good movie to show people, or show people in power? Cause like, I would love to just sit there, sit there and, you know, see maybe what the president's reaction to this, or members of Congress, or, you know, FBI, people in the FBI that have to deal with law enforcement. Like, what do you think?
So if there were like a curriculum for the president to watch and I was yeah. coordinating it, I might include this in that.
Yeah.
I don't think that this president has a, like an earnest or a vulnerable bone in his body, or, you know, sure. he doesn't let things affect him.
Mm-hmm.
Or you never show evidence of that. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as a, yeah, I won't even get into why, but yeah. I don't know if sitting down and watching this with Donald Trump would change anything to mm-hmm. me. You know, why not? In the mm-hmm. sense that this him being aware of these things and these themes throughout American history might literally be something he's unaware of. So maybe, sure. maybe this will have an effect on that.
Yeah.
But again, like it, to me, it's literally just the person who is in office now that I, that would be the yeah. only reason why I would say no to doing yeah. that.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one, and I'll try to do like a comparative analysis with it. So yeah. the reason why I wouldn't want to sit there with the president and watch this movie would be because I kind of what we talked about earlier. I'm afraid he'll get bad fan syndrome. I'll be like, hey, this Bill the Butcher yeah. guy, you know, like he's got some good ideas. You
if
know,
we just gave him more guns, he would.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It would have been fine. So that's the number one reason. And I think when talking maybe with people, you know, like that. Obviously, we don't know him on a personal level, but if we're going to assume what we do know about him is true. Like, I'd rather him watch, to go back to what we were talking about earlier, I'd rather watch, like, Rogue One with him and, like, yeah. kind of subversively put in, like, hey, do you see all these people of color making a difference? Do you see all, like, this woman protagonist? Like kind of, right. like, put it in there, like, under the radar. And that's more of a movie that I would like for maybe for him to see. And it just kind of just get into his subconscious as opposed to this one, which is very overt, very right. violent, very, you know. So even though I like the thesis of this movie, I think I would be very careful on who I talk to you about it. And like, you know, because you were talking about earlier, I feel like you're right. Scorsese films are hard to do this with, but I remember being in middle school and I want to go watch the most violent movie ever because of the violence.
Right.
And
right,
I
think
it's
right,
okay.
Right, right.
That's okay if that's the phase you're going through, but you know, when sure. you're younger, but it's when you grow up, if you don't grow out of that, if there's someone in your life that you know hasn't grown out of that, maybe don't show them this movie. But if you think that they have that, and I mean, we're all immature and mature in different ways. I'm just going to say in this sense, I think I feel comfortable like gauging that person's not maybe the audience for this, and I would say that our commander in chief maybe is not the audience for that. But I just yeah. like as when it, going through all these movies, I'm just really excited. I would like I just love the idea of maybe sitting down with these powerful people and a movie being the thing that we either do or do not engage yeah. them with. So I appreciate you engaging in that hypothetical with me.
Yeah,
so,
man.
Yeah, exactly. No,
I had this yeah. conversation with someone yesterday. I had this conversation with someone that played off the bad fan syndrome yeah. About Kendrick Lamar. I'm a big Kendrick Lamar fan.
Okay,
love his music. Really appreciate him and everything. All the interviews I've heard him, he just seems like he's just extremely thoughtful in all of the art and everything I've heard him create, his videos to his lyrics, everything. I just am a big fan.
Okay.
But I think it's really easy to see Kendrick Lamar and be like, oh, it's Tupac reinvented. Yeah. He even plays with that idea yeah. a lot. He's from Compton. He has that gangster rap kind of visual lifestyle in his mm-hmm. videos and, mm-hmm. and, I think it's easy to you hear songs like DNA or like King Kunta, All Right, or the Humbles, the you know the big one this past summer. That it's easy to see that and be like, oh, he's glorifying this gangster rap lifestyle. Uh-huh. And what I try to do with music that I love, I go to genius.com and I read through the lyrics, and you can read through
yeah.
All of the like comments on lyrics. I suggest if you have a favorite band or a new band you're trying to get into or an album, do this because it's. It'll make you fall in love or it'll make you expose the album for what it's not. Maybe if it doesn't have depth, but if it is an album with depth, maybe go to genius.com and check this out. That's a side note. Anyway, back to Kendrick.
Yeah, I like it.
It made me realize how much depth there is and how much with these songs, he is actually subverting the initial narrative that you think. You think in Humble, he's saying, hey, all of you other, you know, whether it's Jay-Z or Kanye or whatever, be humble. You're nothing compared to me. But throughout all the lyrics of the song, you realize he's talking to himself. He's talking to everyone. Be humble because we aren't anything. We haven't really done it. Like we've maybe won Grammys or whatever. We're doing these things, but we're really just singing songs. Like we're not anything. Like literally be humble. Soprano C, we like to keep it on the high note. It's levels to it. You and I know. Be humble. Holla. Sit down. Holla.
Be humble. Holla. Sit down. Be humble. Yeah.
So anyway, the idea of subverting that is something that most people, including myself, like most people don't realize when they hear that song on the radio or on Spotify or whatever. Sure. They hear it and they're like, yeah, this rap battle. He's putting down these other guys. He's living, mm-hmm. glorifying this negative lifestyle, just like Scorsese. You know, if yeah. you don't think about it, you just kind of yeah. go into it and you just see the characters for what they are and you don't read into it.
Mm-hmm.
What is the movie about then? The movie is just glorifying violence.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I think... Yeah, that's you're right. You brought it up again earlier too, because that's a really good point. Like Scorsese is a hard guy to do that with, because I feel like he doesn't. I don't know. Maybe it's like, for me. Like I was watching Wolf of Wall Street. Like I yeah. didn't see enough of him saying this is bad. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
like,
dude. That I felt dirty after that movie.
Yeah, I did. You're right. Yeah, I needed a shower, a long shower. yeah, yeah. After that one, and I feel like that's like I wish I could think of another movie off the top of my head, but where they're very clearly like, hey. This is not the way you should go. And I think Scorsese is better, you know, at that than not. I think Goodfellas has a good wrapping up saying like,
yeah,
you know, yeah. Like at the end, it's very clear. The guy's looking at the camera saying like, I'm a schmuck. Like, right, you know, like right. I can't like this. This is so lame. My life is so lame or whatever. Like, don't do this almost, you know what I mean? And like, I didn't get that. So this one is like, yeah, I don't know. I can see it's kind of hard for me because I don't think Amsterdam's a good guy either. So maybe I think he fails in that sense.
Right.
But if you,
that's
and,
true.
Yeah. And he tries, I think in, I think he's trying to do that with Bill the Butcher a little bit. I think I would have actually liked it more if Bill the Butcher didn't have that false sense of honor. Like I would have loved it if he hated Priest Fallon and didn't put his picture up and like, and he was more pure evil in that sense.
Yeah.
I could see somebody watching him being like, no, I like that he's a man of honor. And like, no. Like he's not right. Like that's false honor. And I think if you read into it, you know that if you read into it, you know that he's a false complex character. But again, if you're reading it on a surface level, if you're not going in and reading the Kendrick Lamar lyrics deeply, you know what I mean? Then you're going to miss it. You know?
Which goes into neo-Nazism, right? Neo-Nazism is not just people that like to like hit other people or kill people or whatever. Yeah. Like they're not just evil people. These are people that in their minds have logical reasons for what they're doing. Just like Bill the Butcher.
Exactly.
Like they have these, yep. I was going to say black and white reasons, but not ironically, like they have these black and white reasons of what they're doing. And they have these rules and they have this honor system for why they are right. It's not just insane criminal syndrome or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're not just murderous thugs. They might be that as well.
Sure.
But the movement at least has laws and rules within it, which makes it that much more terrifying because it's justified in their eyes.
Yeah. It's just like we were saying earlier, I'd rather just deal with a Joker than deal with
pure evil or insanities. Yeah.
Yeah. It's more black and white. Yeah. It's so crazy. Yeah. So no, I think you bring up a good point, but it's like, I don't know this. Yeah, that's why this is even cooler than I thought it would be. Just like, you know, diving into that. So like, looking at any of the characters, I'd like to talk more about the characters and really kind of maybe talk about the acting and stuff like that, you know, cause I do, this is a film podcast, so we can talk about that. But are there any characters not only that you liked, didn't like, was there anybody that maybe you see them in real life? Like you're like, oh, I saw that character and I know people like that, or I know like an exact person like that. I just wonder if you have any examples.
Hmm.
I have a couple if you want me to start.
Yeah, once you start, I'll be thinking while you talk.
Okay, yeah. So one that really hit me was actually the Boss Tweed character.
Okay.
So watching Boss Tweed, who was a real person.
Right.
So he's standing there on the dock in a scene with Bill the Butcher. And he says, this is what makes America greater. These are real Americans. And Bill the Butcher says, I don't see Americans, I see trespassers. And then Boss Tweed says, well, I see votes. And so I like that because these are two evil men in very different ways. So we have Bill the Butcher. We've been talking about him a lot, about how he's just evil because he has this false sense of superiority about these people.
Yeah.
But this other guy is just a politician. You know what I mean? All he is so he represents more of the system to me. So I don't have a specific person that I want to say.
Sure.
But the way the system is, you know what I mean, right now, I mean, so many people are divided in the sense that like Trump's great, Trump's not great, or I voted for Hillary, didn't vote for Hillary, whatever. I think at the end of the day, if we're being honest, and like I said, I have experience working with a lot of these people, these politicians, like, I've seen it on a firsthand basis, like they really aren't looking at people as people, you know what I mean? They're looking at them as votes or a means to an end. And I just thought that was really interesting to line up Bill the Butcher and lining up Boss Tweed together. And they're both not seeing people. They're seeing one seeing trespassers, the other one seeing like how I could stay in office. And I think that that's a really important thing, like, you know what I mean, to see in the movie. So I see him as like, again, like we talk about how the violence hasn't changed, but really the cycle of politics really hasn't changed. Like the disconnect to our constituents is like, you know, is really what that. So that to me, like watching that character, I thought it was portrayed very well. And not only that, but the actor that plays him, Jim Broadbent, who I like, you know, seen him in Harry Potter and a bunch of other things.
Yeah, yeah.
If you look at real pictures of Boss Tweed.
Also, by the way, in Game of Thrones this season.
Oh, that's right. You're right. He is in Game of Thrones. That's right. Oh my God. It keeps coming.
Everything
back.
Comes back to GOT, man.
Always, every day, all the time. And so two more years, man. I can't believe it. Anyway. But no, so just seeing him, if you look at a picture of him and look at a picture of the real Boss Tweed, they look identical. Like they couldn't have picked a better person for this role. But when I'm watching that, I'm like, oh man, he just epitomizes like, and even now, like, I don't think politics is not as corrupt as it was then, or not blatantly as corrupt. It's been corrupted different ways. It all stems from the base thing that these people aren't seeing people. They're seeing a means to their end or whatever. And
right.
So, and that for me. And then for me, something that I wish I would have seen a connection. It'll be maybe easier with other movies, but I didn't see a good connection with Amsterdam to me. I think that they could have done a better job, like for an audience surrogate. Like, we're supposed to be rooting for this guy, right?
Yeah.
And I see him as like, you know, the only thing I can relate him to are people maybe who have like a personal vendetta to go out. So there's people that maybe are out there protesting right now. And they have a specific reason why they're protesting. They're not just there to be there. And that's what I think is maybe good about Amsterdam is he has a specific like vendetta against.
Is he the cautionary tale for either that or for the everyman, you know, because he's our point of view for the character. Yeah. So he's saying, yes, be against fascism or whatever it is, you know, the evil of Bill the Butcher, but don't get swept up into it too, like Amsterdam ends up doing. Mm-hmm. It just the end, from the big picture, just kind of looks like another gang leader. And that's kind of what he is in that last scene. Yeah. As much as we're rooting for him and, you know, we want him to get Bill the back, and I guess he stands for different ideals. I'm not even too sure. Yeah. That's not really fleshed out. Maybe probably, you know, purposefully in that sense. But yeah, I could see him just being like we think he's good until he kind of crosses a line. And then I remember there's a point in the movie where I was like, oh, he's doing the Departed thing where he's like, he's undercover. This is going to be cool. And then there's this point, it's not even a one decision, but it's almost like, wait, is he just part of Bill's gang now? Like, was he telling Henry, his friend, the truth, basically, and just being, you know, he's trying to find his way or whatever, make his way in New York like everyone else. I almost wish they'd let us into his brain a little more to find out, like, is he planning on killing Bill one day, or maybe he wasn't sure. That's the whole point.
I think the thing, I didn't get it on the first few watches. It took me like three, because I'm like, why on earth doesn't Amsterdam just walk up and like gut this loser in the face? You know, like, why doesn't he do that? And then I think Bill answers that question in the movie. Actually, there's a point when he says, like, you know, like, he asks him, how old are you? And he says he doesn't know. Leo says he doesn't know. And then Bill the Butcher says, well, I'm 41 or however old he says 47. He is. 47. And he's like, you know, I've lived this long. I've lived through fear. And people are scared of me. And I was like, oh, I bet you that's what it is. Amsterdam's scared to death of this guy. Like, he's next to him and he's benefiting from him. So he's like getting those for benefits. But I think he's also scared to death of him. I think he absolutely is in fear of him. And he has this kind of respect, because he lost his father, by the way. And here's another father figure, you know, obviously. And so I think he has that fear and respect, and there's all these emotions going on. So that's what made me that answered that question for me, is like, oh, okay, I bet you he's just scared to death to actually do it. Like, you and I can sit there and be like, man, I really want to, you know, him to kill this guy, but like, could we do that if we were there? Especially if this guy is giving you, like, I wonder if, like, the first time he met him, if he was horrible to him and he was just like, didn't like bring him under his wing, maybe he would eventually just gone and killed him. But the fact he brought him in and, like, you know, was basically giving him like a career, you know what I mean? And like all the shelter and food and all this stuff like that. I think, but fear for me is really, and again, that ties into the bigger narrative too. And one of the things that I hate when I see in politics is these politicians using fear, you know what I mean? And that's absolutely what, you know, and I'm calling it now, you know, we're a couple of years out from the next election. Like, it's going to be hard for Trump to pivot from make America great again. America's awful now. Let's make it great again. He's going to have to pivot. I don't think he can pivot and say it's great now. He's not going to be able to do that. So he's going to have to use fear. We saw Bush do it in 2004 as well, you know, with the Iraq war, you know, don't cut and run. Don't change courses. Like, stay with me. Like, it's not good. Weapons of mass destruction. It was fear, 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 fear. And so that's what, and so I, you know, that we see that. So I think that's something they're trying to tell us too. Like, you know how I survive, as a politician, is I'm going to scare people. You know what I mean? Yep. And so that's
and we see that all over Fox News, right? I mean, and not even just Fox News, but news programs in general of just saying, like, this is what you should be afraid of today. This is what terrifying thing happened in your neighborhood. Absolutely. This is the sponsor that'll help you from this horrible thing. Yep. If you don't buy it, that's going to happen to you.
Yeah. You're so right. It's funny, 'cause I've been watching politics enough now. I've watched it from, you know, Clinton to Bush, to Obama to Trump now, and I've watched it enough to see like how CNN changes and Fox changes and how they all change.
Sure.
So under the like Clinton and Obama administrations, it was like alarms going off, like literally on the bottom of the screen there were like alarms, and their breaking news had like sirens on it, and it was black and yellow, like hazard colors and stuff. And then now it's all red, white, and blue, and it's all like, you know, seen whatever. And then CNN has swapped. CNN has done the opposite, where everything is like on fire. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And so again, it's that fear. You know, we can blame the politicians all day, but the media is doing it as well.
Well, that's kind of the whole my takeaway, at least, from Bowling for Columbine.
Ah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I saw that for a college course. My first day of college, I walked into my English course and we watched Bowling for Columbine the first day.
Nice. It's like,
oh my gosh.
What is this? Michael Moore.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It was a little wake up moment for me. It was good. But I thought of a character who might be in a good, I guess, allegory maybe for a real person. And that's Walter McGinn, Monk, who they prop up and they run him for mayor, deputy mayor. Voted for office.
He's like the district area, basically the Five Points area. He's going to be like the
representative. Some politician. So they're all voting for him. And during the process, I think he just won. He just become an elected official because Bill the Butcher shows up at his doorstep in a public square at Monk's barbershop. And he just stares at him and he's challenging him to a fight or he's trying to instill fear in him or whatever it is. And Monk walks out in front of everyone and he says, "What should I do, people? Like, I'm your elected official. Should I fight this man or should we have a civil discourse?" And no one says anything. He's like, "See, nobody wants us to fight. Come up here and we'll talk like civilized people."
"Citizens of the Five Points, Mr. Bill Cutting is attempting to draw me into an argument that would no doubt end in bloodshed and the compromising of my office. What do you think? Should I engage and silence this relic of the ancient law? Or shall I be your chosen voice in the New Testament, in the New World?" "There you are, Bill. The people have spoken. The very notion of violent reprisal benumbs them. Let's see if we can resolve our grievances the democratic way."
And he turns his back and he starts walking in, and Bill the Butcher throws a cleaver at his back and bashes his head in.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just a brutal scene. Yeah. And to me, and this is showing my bias, which is fine. That I'm a human being. But to me, that was Hillary Clinton saying, let's debate. Let's talk about some issues. And in all three of the debates, she's trying to talk about the issues. And yes, I guess just like Monk, right? She has skeletons in her closet. I'm not saying she's perfect. And she was trying to
keep it on. She has notches on her club.
Exactly. She has notches on her club. But this scene at least wasn't about the notches. This scene was about her trying to talk about the issues and him wanting to talk about everything except for the issues, because that wasn't his base. His strategy was to talk about everything except for the issues, to bring up her dirt or to talk about America, making it great again, whatever the hell that even means. But to not talk about anything but the wall and making America great. Those are only two things he could. He brought everything back around to that.
Yeah. Ben, I don't think you could have hit the nail harder on the head. Like, that was the 2016 election. That scene. Yeah. Because do you remember Trump said, "I can shoot one of my supporters in Times Square and still get elected"?
Still get elected.
This guy killed somebody in broad daylight and he was still he was still powerful.
Still worshipped by everybody,
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, Trump did say that, by the way. Just listening and I know you probably know that, but if you're listening and don't know that, he said I could shoot one of my own supporters in Times Square and still get elected president. And that's exactly what happened with Bill the Butcher. And so I you're right. That scene. And it's funny too, because you're right. Like, I've seen this movie before, but usually I go get a Mountain Dew in that scene. Cause I don't like dealing with that. You know what I mean?
It's brutal,
But for rewatching it for this purpose, I had to watch it. I was like, "Oh, I remember why I don't watch this." It just gives me that horrible feeling. And it was a feeling I felt on November 4th or November 8th or whatever 2016. But that you're so right. That was very apt. And that's why I had you on this podcast, man. I really appreciate it. So
back to the film. I like the butcher versus barber imagery, which I got, I think, way too late. I think it may have been that scene when I realized that. Mm-hmm. But they show it a few times earlier on. And obviously the priest in the very first scene is shaving. So they have that butcher idea and the sharp knives and all that. But the butcher versus the barber, the two apprenticeship or the two careers in that time that revolve around dangerous things.
I'm going to take a lesson from one of our other Overthink podcasts that I listened to earlier, which was the How to Read Comics. And so something that Nick said in that, and he was saying, I'm going to be more upfront and saying what I don't know. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And I was like, that's cool. Now, don't get me wrong. I think I know maybe a little more comics than he has. Nothing close to what Jason knows. But
I
didn't notice that you're talking about the butcher and the barber thing. I've seen this movie. Oh, I said, no joke, probably 10 or 15 times. I've never noticed that before. So instead of sitting here, my plan was to be like, yeah, Ben, I knew that and I saw that coming. No,
holding my hand through my first watching. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, no. I've never made that connection before. So I really appreciate that. That is
that's
awesome.
Cool.
So
you're welcome.
Exactly. Yeah. Thanks, Maui.
Yep.
So something to wrap it up to before we finish up. I don't know if you had any like stray observations. There's a couple things I want to say that are more like on a filmmaker level, but I just before.
Yeah, I'll say something even shallower than on a film level.
Oh, cool. Okay, I got
was great coats, great hats.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's funny.
Right? Like, it must have been hot, yeah. But, like, I wish I could pull off that giant, like, trench coat that was, like, you know, you could tell it was, like, six times thicker of, like, wool than, like, a normal trench coat today. And, like, the 20-gallon hats or whatever they were wearing. Yeah. They, oh, dude, they all look so good. I wish I could bring those back.
It's funny because we were talking earlier about how people maybe idolize Bill the Butcher in the way they shouldn't.
Yeah.
If they want to idolize his fashion, I'm okay with that.
Dude, always had a cigar or a skinny pipe sticking out of his mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked that. I
liked great mustache.
Yeah. Now, and something that I've really come around, changed on Leonardo DiCaprio, and I want to talk about that here. So again, this is very shallow. This is nothing to do with current events or politics. But like, I think I used to think he was a good actor. And now that I've watched more of his movies over and over again, I don't think he's a great actor. I don't.
Wow, it's turned.
Yeah, it really turned. And I think maybe I was younger. And the reason why is I've seen him in several movies do the same thing over and over again. He does it in this movie. So when he's getting tortured, he always says, excuse me for saying this, but he always says, Jesus, the same way in every movie.
Yeah,
so watch it. I bet you there's probably a YouTube clip of him. He says Jesus, like, so the way he says Jesus in this is the same way he says Jesus when Malf jumps out of the window in Inception. It, like, sounds like the same. He does it. Wow. He does it in Titanic, and he does it again in Aviator. So I've seen him do it multiple times the way he says it, and it's just like, would all those characters say that? You know what I mean? Would they all go to that? Like, that's not something I say when I stub my toe. You know, for example, but like maybe if I'm playing a character and I see him doing that, but no, that just must be something I imagine Leonardo DiCaprio does in his real life. And he doesn't, you know, it's, and so the other thing he does too, that drives me crazy. He always says like, huh, at the end of some sentences, he's like, what are you doing here? Huh? Why are you here? Huh? And he does that multiple characters. What? You know what I mean? Like multiple. Yeah. So I don't want to ruin him for you now and break Leo for you. But
wow,
the only movies I haven't seen him do it in, or what was the most recently was in The Revenant. And I think it's because he didn't say anything in The Revenant, really.
Right.
You know, he was just tortured for all that time.
He was extremely mumbled if he did.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So maybe he's growing as an actor. But yeah. So for me watching this movie, it really highlighted again, like, man, especially him next to Daniel Day-Lewis. So even though Daniel Day-Lewis methods might be a little out there, it's undeniable that he is one of the greatest actors of all time. Like, I mean, one of the greatest actors of all time. And so to see them next to each other, I was like, oh, they're not playing in the same league. You know what I mean?
Interesting. So
I didn't feel that. For example, when Liam Neeson and him were playing off each other, or Brendan Gleeson and him were playing off each other, I felt that, you know, I'm like, oh, these guys are, you know, these, but I did not feel that. I'm like, man, like, it's just like, it doesn't seem that way to me with Leo, as I see it. So that was like a takeaway I took from the movie. And it's just hard for me to not see that. And
different are Billy Costigan and Amsterdam? Like, they're, like, other than their backgrounds, like, if you flip them, would they basically be the same character?
Kind of, yeah. Actually,
like, as far as, like, mannerisms and stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, too. Yeah, because he does the same thing. He screams Jesus the same way when, his name is slapping his hand. Like, I'm telling you, watch
it. Yes, you're right. Yeah. Are you a cop? Are you a cop?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's something that he can't break his Leo. Where, wow. An example where you'll watch Daniel Day-Lewis, and he became Abraham Lincoln, bro. Yeah, that's one of my favorite movies. I cry every time I watch it. I don't care. I'll just put it out there. I just love that movie. But he just, for me, like, I grew up idolizing Abraham Lincoln. Like, I read books about him. I love him. He's one of my favorite guys. And then it's funny, in this movie, he throws a knife at a picture of him.
Yeah.
And then later on would go to play him. But the thing is, I see those two as two different people. I believe Bill the Butcher, and I believe, like, that he was Lincoln, and like, and to see that, and but just to see that next to somebody that is heralded as one of the better actors of our time, in Leo, I was like, I just don't see it anymore, man. I just, he's not. Don't get me wrong, he's one of those guys, though. At the end of the day, though, if a movie's coming out with Leo in it, I'll go see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was gonna say the two roles I haven't seen him do that in were the Revenant, which I talked about, but the other one was I can't remember the name of the character, but when he was in Django Unchained.
Yeah.
And the reason that is from what I understand it, I mean, Quentin Tarantino, is his scripts are word perfect. You can't, like, so at the end of his sentence, if he would have said, huh, like, there's no way Tarantino would, like, he would kick him off set. And he's the one people that can do that. Scorsese, I get to see him. Oh, we got it. Let's just keep going. But like, Tarantino says, no, I didn't put comma, huh, at the end of the sentence. This character wouldn't say Jesus that way. So we're going to do it again. You know what I mean? And so I've seen, so maybe under the right, like, because that to me is actually Leo's best performance. To me, the scene in that Django is just, it's so good, which is really interesting. That's another one that is really
relevant.
Another
brutal scene, dude.
Yeah, yeah. It's another very relevant movie right now. So maybe that'll come up in another episode.
I think Bill Simmons, I don't know if he thought this up or adapted it, but he's probably most famous for using war, the sports statistic, wins above replacement for actors as a way of grading how good were they actually in this film? So not just like Leo in The Revenant. And this is an example that he's used a couple times on his podcast. Not just Leo in The Revenant, but how good would someone else be in The Revenant in his place? How good would someone else be as Amsterdam?
Yeah.
And he flipped at the time, end of 2015, he flips Matt Damon from The Martian with Leo in The Revenant.
Uh-huh.
And he says, if you flip them, you put Leo on Mars and you put Matt Damon in the woods, which movie still holds up? And he argues that Matt Damon in The Revenant still holds up and Leo on Mars falls apart.
You're right. Oh, wow.
Which I don't know if I completely agree with. I'd have to think about it more, but I think that's a really cool way.
Yeah.
And it, obviously impossible and very subjective, but a very cool way to think about actors and not just like, wow, this guy played that guy great. But like, what was the level of difficulty for playing that level, that character great? Was it really that hard?
Yeah, that's true. So bringing it back to this film, I don't know that many people that could have played Bill the Butcher, but you probably could have, stuck a few other people in Amsterdam's role. So but that was just another one too. I feel like the movie, he was missing a lot. That character missed a lot of depth for me. You know, you kind of want to have, for me, when I'm watching a movie too, I want to have somebody to like either root for or be like, no, I see me in that guy, you know? So
this,
for me, when I watch The Godfather, and that's another one and two I watch over and over again, like in ways I really like relate to Michael Corleone. Like I would never do some of the things that he did, but I'm like, no, I get like where he's coming from. Like I get like how he was, his life was supposed to go one way and it went this way. And I feel like we can all kind of relate to that. So like he's doing this thing that like he doesn't want to be doing, but he feels like he has to do. And I'm like, no, I get that. I've been there before, but I didn't get that. Like when I'm watching Amsterdam in this movie where I'm like, you know, I mean, maybe I've never, you know, luckily I didn't have like my parent killed in front of me when I was a kid. So maybe I would be able to relate to that. But you know what I mean? Like it was hard for me to like relate and being like, oh, okay. I mean, I don't see, or again, like we talked about before, if that was me, if I am trying to relate to him, I would, the first time I saw Bill the Butcher again, I'd just kill him right there. You know what I mean? And so, so it's kind of hard for me to, you know, so, or I might've also ran away with Cameron Diaz to California. So
it's a long boat trip, but come on, that would have been great.
And we've done her short-sighted as well. We haven't really talked much about her, but I think she did okay. I think she was okay.
I was thinking that throughout. I remember when I saw her, I was biased, and I immediately think of Something About Mary and Charlie's Angels and like these just like comic kind of non-serious films, like not Oscar bait kind of films. Yeah. And so seeing her in this, I was surprised. I totally forgot she was in this, and she's one of the main characters. But I think she did a great job.
Yeah, I think I
would have liked to see her, and maybe she's still alive, but I would like to see her do more like serious films.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm missing the Cameron Diaz IMDb, but I feel like I haven't seen that.
No, I don't think I've seen it either. And I think she is like, she wasn't given enough to do in this movie. I think she could have been given more and actually done really well. And I mean, obviously, like, you know, this is Hollywood, so I mean, she does.
I don't at all want to say that it's her fault. Like,
yeah,
I obviously know that there's,
that's what I
she's
think
in the Hollywood gap, right? Between 29 and 45, when you can't be a mom yet and you can't be like the main love interest or whatever. And which is, I obviously dispute that wholeheartedly or whatever. I reject that reality.
Mm-hmm. But you're resisting that.
I'm resisting that. Thank you. Exactly. I don't want to at all put the blame on her for choosing those roles or anything like that.
Yeah,
but it would have been cool, and it still would be cool to see her in dramas.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think, for what she was given, she did a really good job. But I'm sitting there. She's not talking to any other women. She's like just there, like she's this object of these two men. And like, so the fact that she did a lot with nothing really shows that she could probably do a lot with more. You're right. And so,
totally.
I think that she was given a real short side. But I thought she was pretty good in it. So, I mean, do you have like a favorite line or favorite part that you want to talk about? It doesn't have to be like relevant to politics or something, but just something that you just like won't want to discuss here.
I did like when he dances with Cameron Diaz, or she picks him to dance with, right?
Yeah.
And Leo, and the priest says, like, congratulations, you've won, you're king of the night or whatever. Regular services are held at the church between 6 and 8. And he just under his breath really quickly goes, go to hell.
Exactly. That was good.
Fantastic.
That was really good.
Oh,
okay,
good.
Cool.
Another part that I appreciated was the quote that he says, or the prayer, I guess, that he says when he's going to kill Bill the Butcher, when Leo's going to kill Bill the Butcher, and he says,
may God put the steel of the Holy Spirit in my spine and the love of the Blessed Virgin in my heart. Amen.
But to me, it's bringing in, and it's throughout this film, the Catholic and Protestant, just the religious imagery and the religious dialogue,
a lot of
that. Mm-hmm. And part of me is like, wow, they're really trying to force this. And I was like, no, this is what it was.
Yeah.
And this is in a lot of ways the history of Ireland as well. This is the history of America. This is the history of of Britain. This is a history of a lot of countries. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I kept it to those three, but yeah. First off the top of my head that related to this movie, but of just how it's either by the color of our skin or by our religious beliefs. And that's how we separate and segregate. And that was something that maybe not subtly, but that was another layer of the fighting of this movie.
Awesome. A part that I really liked, or a line that I really liked that stuck out to me that I thought was really entertaining, but also tragically true, is when Boss Tweed and I could have just watched a movie of just Boss Tweed and Bill the Butcher, like, yes, for 3 hours. Oh, I could have just done
good
that.
Scenes.
But they're talking in a scene, and he says, like, I need you to go and maintain order in the 5 points. And he's like, why don't you just have the cops do it? And he goes, oh, goodness, no, like, the appearance of the law must be upheld, especially when the law is being broken. And I'm like, yes, I love that. To me, like, first of all, it was just hilarious, but the way that he delivers it was perfect.
Yes.
But it's also just so, it's so true, though. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's, and like I said, I'm not going to name names here, but I've seen politicians talk like that. Like, I've heard them say stuff that, like, would just make your, like, hair turn up in the back of your neck, where they talk like that. They're like, oh, no, we can't do that. You know what I mean? Like, well, you know, let's just do it over here. And so nobody pays attention. And it's more true than, you know, I mean, that is just like, I think there's some movies I watch. It's funny because people have asked me before, because I've been to the White House. I've met presidents and everything. And some people have asked me, like, oh, is it more House of Cards? Is it more West Wing? And I say every time it's Veep. It's Veep is like, that is what it's mostly. That's to me more true.
Everyone is Gary.
Yeah, no, seriously. It's just like that to me is the more realistic version of it or whatever. But that reminded me of it because it's a funny line, but it's true. And that was it's very much Veep for me when I'm watching Veep. I'm like, oh, man, I've been in this situation before. Where to me, like, House of Cards is just too evil, and then West Wing, even though it's the best show of all time, undisputed, you can't change my mind on that.
No, of course. Why would I ever dispute that?
Yeah, absolutely. But that's all very rose-colored, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. And people want to say it's either oh, it's really dark, or it's really great, and your opinion probably changes on the administration. But for me, I'm like, no, it's all a circus, and that's what Veep is.
So no one knows what they're doing. No one has control completely. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you said you had a line you liked.
Yeah. From Boss Tweed, during election day, when they're getting people to vote and then shave and go back and vote again and all that. Uh-huh. There's all the just like horrible ballot stuffing. And he turns to one of his minions or whatever, who says, like, whoever it was won. Like, they already won by, you know, 3,000 more votes than there are, like, citizens in this county or whatever it was. Some horrible thing. Yeah. He's like, remember the first rule of politics. The ballots don't make the votes. The counters do. Keep counting.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, oh, I mean, that's probably more relevant to, like, the 2000s.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I thought of that too. Yeah.
Sorry, Florida. But that to me still hit a little too close to home.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, there you go. That's another good one. Anytime we can watch one of these movies and something just absolutely hits too close to home, that's great. So
yeah.
So I won't ask you necessarily, Ben, if you would to maybe rate this movie, but is this something that you would recommend to somebody that maybe wants to tackle or engage deeper in what's going on in our country today?
Definitely. I think a lot of people don't know where to start. Me for one, I get lost in fighting neo-Nazis and knowing how to combat them, you know, aside from just retweeting things. And and obviously there's reading articles and sharing them and try to share knowledge of well-researched things that you respect as well, that you've actually read the articles on, and as well as Antifa, and then just the multifaceted issues going on. I think this is a nice way to kind of think about what's going on today and to think about the multiple layers of what's going on today in kind of a new way. It was kind of refreshing is not the right word, because it wasn't a good feeling, but refreshing in the sense that it gave me a new perspective on the kind of the terrors that are happening today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so I appreciate that. And I would say the same thing too. I think I would like to tell people to use the themes in this to keep resisting. That's the whole idea behind this podcast.
Yeah.
I don't mean resist. Don't go punch a Nazi in the face, but like resist all these negative things going on out there. I read a really cool quote today. I think it was from Rachel Held Evans that said, like, don't let them make you hate them. You know what I mean? Like, don't let them allow that, because if you hate them, then they win. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And that to me is what this movie does. This movie's like, you know, this movie, the people fail because they hate the other side, and the other side makes them hate them, you know, and it would have been better off if we found a way to love on these people.
Idea of the other is just an extremely corrosive idea.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So I think, I would definitely recommend this movie to somebody with that caveat being like, hey, like, remember, don't do this. It would have been better off if we found a way to love this person. Don't get me wrong, I'm always tired of being the being the bigger person, because it always it's harder. But you know,
sure,
that,
sure.
But that's the whole point, right? It's that's the whole point. Is usually it's yeah. hard, the light side is the harder side to
exactly.
follow.
So that's true. Right.
So thank you so much, Ben. I mean, this has been awesome. I'm looking forward man. To more of these. I'm looking forward to continuing to resist that negative narrative out there and talking about films to do it. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Awesome. All right. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll be back next month with another Resistance Rewind. And of course, if you have any questions or would like to contribute to the podcast, I really, really like to hear other films out there that we should be talking about now. I don't care if it's a year old or if it's a 50-year-old film. If there's something in there that we can glean and learn more about each other and how we can deal with the things going on in our modern day, I would really would love that. So head on over to the Overthink podcast website at overthinkpod.com, and we would really love to hear from you. Thanks again for stopping by.